From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The post-debate coverage on Thursday brought with it the usual obfuscations of and unabashed biases against the Democratic Party's clear presidential frontrunner. CNN in particular had the following headlines about Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders: stopping Bernie Sanders just got a lot harder, and how Bernie Sanders became a millionaire. The so-called liberal media has shifted from what was called the Bernie blackout some months ago to overtly hostile and often uninformed analysis of the critically important presidential race currently. My guest is Robin Anderson. She teaches media studies at Fordham University and writes for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, where her latest article is called Fact-Checking NPR's Attempted Takedown of Bernie Sanders. Welcome to the program, Robin.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So first, let's talk about your piece that centered on the NPR story. I imagine that you focused on that as one example, because, of course, NPR and certainly other media outlets have misreported on Sanders as a matter of course. It's kind of routine. So I imagine that you settled on this particular piece by NPR because it was quite illustrative of how Sanders is treated by the mainstream corporate slash liberal media?
That's right. And actually, I think the piece I chose from NPR was maybe a little even worse than some of the other ones. What I point out is that even in the Washington Post, for example, that paper warned its readers that Pete Buttigieg was talking with industry talking points, for example, and NPR never says that.
Right. So often they tend to jump on anything that comes out of Sanders' mouth and even the people who support Sanders. So the particular piece in NPR was co-hosted by two of its seasoned political reporters who were talking about the Iowa caucus. This had just happened after the caucus. And one of the things that you point out quite early on is that just in talking about Trump, who, of course, the Democratic nominee will face in November, the coverage just seemed to normalize Trump as a normal president, which is the bigger framing for how somebody like a Sanders candidate is seen, right?
Absolutely. That piece was important because it was the first launch of the Democratic primary just before the Iowa caucuses. And instead of really leading with the Democrats and the voters and what was going to happen that night, they lead with Trump, completely ignoring that he had just flouted the Constitution, that the Republican senators had a sham trial. They talked about, oh, it's going to be the State of the Union, and this is where he's really going to launch his campaign, as if he were just any past president.
What was the conversation around the issue of electability, which is a word that has come up over and over again since last year when the primary, the campaigning began in earnest, back when Joe Biden was polling quite high? There was just a lot of discussion in mainstream media that trickled down to, you know, even some voters about who is electable, because people are desperate to beat Trump at the polls.
That's right. Electability actually was launched and became a media trope in April of last year when former campaign, a speechwriter for Obama and now a consultant to the corporate Democrats, said Bernie Sanders can't beat Trump. He's unelectable. It won't work. What that really set this trope about was that he's too far left. So this electability is now, you know, almost synonymous with, we need a centrist. We need someone who won't rock the boat. That's the only person who can beat Trump. Over and over again, of course, since then, Bernie Sanders has demonstrated his ability in poll after poll to beat Trump. But it kind of framed and opened their discussion of Democrats and Democratic voters. The other thing that struck me about Mara Liasson's assertions,
she was one of the two political reporters, along with Mary Louise Kelly, on NPR.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when she opened her discussion, Mary Louise Kelly asks her, "Well, what do you see?" "Well, I see a very unsettled race." Democrats are paralyzed. They just don't know who to vote for because they don't know who's going to be. They all have all these vulnerabilities and this kind of very scary atmosphere that was created. When actually, at the end of January, a Quinnipiac poll demonstrated that, you know, Democrats are raring to go. Their motivation to vote, they actually characterize it as sky high. People really wanted to start to get to the polls. And what we've seen subsequently also is that Democrats are mad. They are, they, in particularly in states around the country, they are now telling pollsters that it to 10% more people are saying that they're going to get out and really vote in the primary than they did last time.
So I suppose it just makes for good headlines to suggest that there's a muddled field, that people are uncertain, that, you know, there could be, no matter who shows up as a front runner or not, that Trump could end up beating them. Because, of course, when the more uncertainty there is in a presidential race or any race, the more there is for the media to sort of breathlessly follow along in their horse race style reporting. Is that part of the problem?
Absolutely. And these media narratives are very, very ensconced in media framing, and they don't seem to even reflect any of the realities of this current primary season. Mara Liesman is also emphasizing, along with this unelectability trope, that so many of the candidates have vulnerabilities that Trump can exploit. But head-to-head matchups with Trump, even with the poll question as, would you vote for Trump or would you vote for the socialist Bernie Sanders? And they say that they would rather vote for Trump. But God, oh, now I'm all flustered. Hold on.
That's okay.
Okay. Sorry.
No worries. Okay. Take a breath and we'll be fine.
Okay. So, yes, what Mara Liasson also emphasized in the piece were the vulnerabilities of the other Democratic candidates. And those unspoken vulnerabilities that everybody has been saying for so long, Bernie's not going to be elected the president because he's a socialist. Head-to-head matchups in polling, where the poll question even identifies Bernie Sanders as a socialist, they still pick him over President Trump. So those vulnerabilities are basically false. They're part of the media narrative of he's too far left and he can't be elected, therefore.
So what about the fact that Sanders himself tends to not make it very much into the conversation to begin with? We first had the Bernie blackout when, although his poll numbers were pretty healthy, Biden's were higher last year in several polls, and so Sanders was just nowhere to be seen in the headlines. Now that he is leading the candidates, they're forced to cover him. But sometimes, even then, we see media news articles ignore him. For example, when the latest poll came out, national polls showed Bloomberg having had the biggest jump in his numbers. That's what made the headline. But the fact that Sanders was leading with 31 or 32% in some of the media outlets reporting this didn't even make it into the headline. His name, the front runner's name, just wasn't there.
Right. Nor that he had actually a double digit lead. That's not what they led with. After New Hampshire, for you recall, it was better to be in second and third place, you know, not in first place, too. So they, it did go from a blackout. But there was a fairly nasty error, you know, at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, where he started to openly be called names. He was old. He was grumpy. Get away from me. There are some interesting online media clips that put these kinds of media presentations together, and you could see how bad it was actually getting. Even though Bernie was not talked about, Bernie has changed the conversation for the Democratic Party. He's the one who has basically set the policy agendas. He's the one with the big ideas, and he has won the idea primary. So everything from Medicare for all to minimum wage to free college to a wealth tax. Those are the things now that set the debate and what the candidates talk about at those debates. So I think the significance of Bernie And imagine if you're one of the pundits and you're from the pundit class and you've tried to ignore him and you've said, oh no, every time he keeps winning, this is a terrible thing. And now we've got Bloomberg, the savior, according to the New York Times or the Washington Post. He's the dream candidate because he's the centrist who can not only beat Trump, but he can knock Bernie out. And over again, they've proved the American public has proven that they're not listening to them. Because Bernie has also essentially changed the way the campaigns are run on the ground. This is now a social campaign. This is a coalition of groups from around the country on every issue, and he pulls them in. And they can find the information that they need in polls. They can find the information that they need online. And that's why they're starting to move away from Bernie and start to really criticize his supporters online.
So, and I want to get to the Bernie bros issue, but let's focus on one of the issues that came up in the debate on Wednesday night, which comes up in every single debate because somehow the panelists, the moderators just can't move past this, and that's Medicare for All. Healthcare, voters have repeatedly said, is their number one issue. And on Wednesday night, Sanders cited a very important new study that had just come out in The Lancet by researchers at the Yale School of Public Health that showed a Medicare for All system would be the most efficient way to get healthcare to all Americans. It would save billions of dollars, and most importantly, it would save 68,000 American lives a year. It still seems as though the media wants to punish Sanders for continuing to bring this up. But this isn't just an idea that he has come up with, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is a policy that people have been working on for years. As he points out, we're the only advanced democracy that doesn't have Medicare for their citizens.
And I'm wondering if it's backfiring for them to slam him on this issue, because for those Americans, and there are millions and millions of them who are underinsured or uninsured or who are bankrupt because of medical problems, they see this critique and then they see what Sanders is saying. And I think they're smart enough to know who's to be trusted.
Well, and absolutely, you can hear the medical industry complex talking points in the things that Buttigieg has proposed, which is, oh, but people need a choice. You know, there's the old government-run Medicare red flag again. We don't want to get rid of the private healthcare that we have. And these are industry talking points, and Buttigieg has really been successful in getting that into the dialogue. But as you point out, it's now starting to fade. People are seeing through it. More research by The Lancet is showing that this is really the best way to go. That is, but of course, the medical insurance industry knows that they're going to be out of a job and out of work and out of a lot of profits. And during the debate, they also put in multi-million dollar of advertisements in that debate saying, private insurance, you don't want to lose your private insurance. Let's start from what we've got and not just throw everything out.
And Sanders was challenged by Buttigieg in terms of the Culinary Workers Union opposing, they're in a political battle with him over his support for Medicare for All because some of the leadership in that union worry about the loss of their benefits. But I also want to talk about Elizabeth Warren, who some have pointed out, and I think they're right, she has suffered from a tremendous blackout in the media as well. On Wednesday night, she seemed to kind of surge back with some strong sense of, quite justified anger, I think. And she took to task Buttigieg and Klobuchar's healthcare plans. I believe she called Buttigieg's plan a PowerPoint plan, PowerPoint presentation, while Klobuchar's plan was more of a post-it note. So she sort of seemed to, and I'm sure it helped Sanders that there were two people on that stage defending the idea of Medicare for All, even if she hasn't been perfect on that issue.
Well, she has been blacked out from the media, as you point out, but she wiped the floor with Mike Bloomberg about his past with women and the non-disclosure agreements. That was the only question he actually had at least some kind of an answer for. The other answers, Bloomberg couldn't even talk about Medicare for All. He didn't even have a counter policy. All Bloomberg said was, well, we should leave Obamacare in place and just try to make that better now. So Bloomberg, for all of the money he's trying to buy his way into the campaign, he clearly hasn't paid for a policy analyst to give him some policies. Elizabeth Warren was so impressive on Wednesday night that she couldn't be ignored.
Let's talk about the myth of the Bernie bros, which keeps coming up over and over again. And on Thursday, one of Sanders' most prominent endorsers and supporters, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, was on The View talking about politics. And Meghan McCain took her to task. This is what she said, which I thought was just so shocking. This is, but it's an example of this myth of the toxic culture of among Sanders' supporters. McCain said to AOC, "One thing that connects women on the left and women on the right is the abuse that we've all been subjected to by Bernie bros. It is by far of anything I've ever done in my entire life, the most violent, the most misogynistic, the most sexist, the most harmful. Sanders is a real problem, and I don't think he's doing enough to tamper it down," McCain said. "How do you feel that he's attached to this deeply misogynistic, and I would go so far as to say violent, sector of people?" And of course, this has been echoed by other women pundits, if you will, in the mainstream media as well, and men. What do you make of this?
I find it very interesting that when those kinds of accusations are made, you know, when they use Twitter as a news source and they show you opinions, it's very infrequent that there's actually a Twitter that they use as an example. There's actually an example that comes out. Bernie's been very clear on this. He actually said, if that is happening in my campaign, they're not representing me and they're not representing us. So he's laid that to rest. He's also at the same time has talked about how the African-American women in his campaign have been trolled, and how his wife has been trolled and bullied online. I think this, and I think what we can read from Meghan McCain's dialogue is it's an exaggerated extreme demonization, which is what it's meant to be. They can't really hit Bernie because they've been trying to hit him and he just gets more and more popular.
And there's just not much there to hit because he's just kind of a consistent and frankly, you know, sort of boring candidate. He doesn't have, Sanders doesn't have the kind of colorful personality that can get a candidate in trouble. He focuses on policies. He fixates on the policies. And that's kind of why a lot of people like him.
That's right. He's consistent. He never changes. He just repeats himself.
We don't need a friend in a politician or a celebrity. We need someone who can get the job done, I would imagine.
What's so fun about watching all of the online tapes that everybody feels compelled to make in support of Bernie is the way that he's always hugging people. I don't see, you know, he's so compassionate also and empathetic. And I think that's what, for example, Bloomberg just showed himself to be bored, just standing there. Why can't I be somewhere else? I'm rich. I don't really have to put up with having to try to convince people. You know, it was very, very different.
And there's also this sense that the you know, when you bring up this idea of the Bernie bros, that Sanders' supporters are vastly young, angry white men, and as an attempt to equate Sanders' supporters with Trump's supporters, and therefore Sanders with Trump, which seems to be the strategy of some centrist Democrats who are really frightened of Trump. But it's kind of shocking to see even, you know, well-meaning people equate Sanders with Trump. Trump, a fascistic, demagogic, dictatorial, unethical, you know, I could go on and on, you know, what kind of president we have. But they seem to equate the two. Yeah.
Yes. I think that those kind of simple dichotomies reflect the extent to which the pundit class simply can't think of anything to say. They can't engage the real grassroots policies that are so desirous on the part of the American public. When Bernie spoke on Wednesday night, when Buttigieg said that we need a unifying candidate, you're a polarizing candidate. Bernie said, why don't we not think about polarizing, but think about it's time that we started talking about the working people in this country and how they've been working for 45 years and their wages haven't gone up one bit. Let's talk about those kinds of things. Media can't talk about that. So they have to come up with a whole false set of dichotomies and various ways that they can just kind of stand there and flail their arms and say, don't like him, stop liking him. Why are you doing this? We're afraid that we're going to lose our corporate privilege.
How much of the problem is the fact that most of the corporate media figures are really part of the class of Americans that cannot relate to struggling Americans? Instead of commenting on and analyzing politics, they seem to be shaping it because they see a threat to their own lifestyle, earning ability, taxes, fancy health insurance, in what Sanders is representing.
Right. Well, Fair actually wrote a pretty good piece about Politico in which the writer said, well, he plays an instrument. He's a neat guy. We kind of like Buttigieg because he's kind of like us. And they see themselves reflected in a candidate like Buttigieg. As you point out, Chris Matthews, for example, he's talking about, oh no, if Bernie gets elected, they're going to execute me in the town square. He makes $5 million. And these people, the press used to be, a watchdog, and they used to distinguish themselves from those in government, and they used to kind of have an independent stance. That hasn't been true for NPR or any of the major news outlets for a very long time. They hang out with these people. They relate to them. They also take the talking points of the corporate Democrats, which they call moderate. But of course, they're not moderate. Leaving things as they are, leaving the status quo intact as it seems that their goal is, let's not change Medicare. Let's not do any of this stuff. We can't have a Green New Deal. We need to keep investing in fossil fuels. That is not a moderate position anymore. Those are now, in the age of planetary collapse, those are extremely radical positions. The fact that we're not immediately moving to proposals that immediately stop the use of fossil fuels and use alternative energies, and all of the ways in which we are brutalizing people on the bottom of the economic and social scales. Anybody who says we should not stop doing that right now is an extremist. They are not moderates.
Finally, there is this really critical aspect of the Democratic Party's voters and independent voters who lean Democratic, and the disconnect between how they view Sanders and how elites view Sanders. Isn't it true that polls show that regular Democrats, rank and file Democrats, don't have as much of a problem with the fact that Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist as elites do? They don't see the same view of Sanders as elites do. And part of this is that we do have more access to independent media. We do have access to more independent information than right. we used to. So we're not relying on the gatekeepers alone.
That's right. And Sanders supporters skew toward the young people. Mm-hmm. The young people understand from their lived experiences that capitalism is not working for them and has not been working for them. When you poll a young person, they're not afraid of the word socialism. That's quite different for an older person. But it's misleading when they present polls and they say, oh, the majority of the American public, they don't like socialists. But when you say Bernie Sanders is a socialist, they still like Bernie Sanders. So it's the idea that this once powerful concept used to be able to just be a hot button issue and destroy whoever it was associated with isn't working anymore. And that, I think, means real progress. And that's from the lived experiences of young people.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Robin, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in FAIR from our website.
Thank you. It was great.
My guest has been Robin Anderson. She teaches media studies at Fordham University and writes for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Her latest article was Fact-Checking NPR's Attempted Takedown of Bernie Sanders. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes, and now Spotify.